by Derek Byrne, actor, director, writer, and of course a broadcaster, about his new play, Shadows, which is happening at the Dublin Fringe Festival this coming Saturday, the 7th of September. Derek, you're very welcome along.
Thank you, Robbie. It's great to talk to you.
It's always the opposite way around with you, though, because normally you interview guests, don't you?
I know. I'm actually, you know what? I'm getting used to being on the other end. You know, for change, it's all about me, and I kind of like it that way.
Well, you've done your time, because you were a former station manager of Phoenix FM, who we have a connection with, and of course, going back to the commercial stations, 98 FM. How did the broadcasting come into your career?
Well, I'm still broadcasting. I'm doing a fair bit with Youth Talk as well, and I'm doing some recordings over the next couple of weeks. I'm not allowed to say anything, but there'll be something on the horizon. But my broadcasting career started, like my journalism career, completely and utterly by accident.
Yeah.
I was asked to do an interview on the late night talk show for... I was asked to stand in for Alan Hughes, who at the last minute couldn't make it. He was a good friend of mine at the time. And I had been writing a monthly column in one of the LGBT newspapers and became known as the kind of the gay Carrie Bradshaw of Dublin. And that's how I was introduced and interviewed. And within 5 months, I had my own show. And then I also became pretty sort of political and controversial. And that led to slots on some current affairs shows. And when the producer from 98FM moved to News Talk, he took me with him. And that's, you know, culminated in me ending up now writing on the opinion pages of the Irish Times and doing a lot still with News Talk. But this is great. The Shadows has been amazing because it's the first play that I've written. And it's an opportunity for people to... get to know me as a creative writer rather than as someone who can sometimes be a little bit controversial.
But that's your personality, and that's what we love about you, because you always did shoot from the hip. Like, I mean, this play, it's, well, we have to describe the play. First of all, the acclaimed actors, Paddy Fagan, who's amazing, and Shane Casey. How did you manage to cast these two guys?
Well, back earlier in the year when I was considering entering the play for the Dublin Fringe Festival, I did a rehearsed reading first, because I'd never written dialogue before, and I was worried about, is the play actually going to sound like people talking, or is it just going to sound like me pontificating again in the
yes.
Irish time? So I did. The Fringe were very good. They allowed me to have a room where I could invite some guests along, people I knew from the industry and friends, and people who I knew would give me honest feedback. That's very important. You know, we can all have people say, yeah, you're wonderful, you're great, but I didn't need that. I needed people who would say, no, it's a piece of shit, if it was. So Paddy kind of, I bumped into him a few days beforehand in the French office, and I said, you know, Paddy, I think you'd be great to read this part. Would you be interested? He came along, and from the moment he opened his mouth, I was like, I want him. I just want him in this role. He just was a natural. And he even said to me afterwards, you know what, Derek, I've said these words before. This really resonates with me. So he was cast, as far as I was concerned. And then when The Fringe, when I found out in April that the play was actually accepted, I was like, oh, well, now I've got to find the other actor. And that took me a while, actually. That took a fair while. But Shane G. Casey is a very established actor. He's got a wide range. He's actually a straight man, and he's playing a gay character. The play's about two gay characters, two former lovers. So I was delighted that, in fact, he wasn't gay, because it gave the play another dimension. You know, basically, this is two actors who are playing two parts, and it doesn't matter what their sexual orientation is at all. Which Shane is great, and I needed a contrast between the two. There's basically 10 years between the two characters, and I think I've got it physically, emotionally, mentally. They just are exactly what I had in my head when I was writing it. I couldn't be happier with both of them. They are both amazing performers. They're amazing actors, and I think people are in for a real treat.
So it was meant to be. Now, without spoiling the plot, what's the synopsis of the story? Because I heard rumours abound that it's actually about an actual event that did happen to you.
Well, it's based on an event that happened to me. I bumped into my former partner one Friday night about 3 a.m. in the morning, and we ended up sitting on the side of the street having a conversation. And when he left, I kind of felt, you know what, that wasn't the conversation I wanted to have.
Wow.
There were loads of things I didn't say, loads of things I wanted to say. So the play ended up being the conversation I would have wanted to have with him. But you know, I couldn't set it. We'd met on Capel Street Bridge, and the Fringe Festival people were like originally I wanted to do it in a theatre, set it on Capel Street Bridge, and they were like, you know, would you not actually think of doing it outside? I said, well, we can't close off Capel Street Bridge every night, so what will I do? So I decided that I would base it up a laneway. It's just off High Street, which is the street between Christchurch and Thomas Street. And there happens to be, now this is where the controversial bit comes in, I've set it in an actual laneway where men go to cruise for late night sex in the heart of Dublin.
Okay, just for a listener's point of view that don't know where it is, it does happen that quite often in Dublin City. It happens at a particular time at night where homosexual men would go and is it cruising and find a bit of fun.
It's cruising.
It's been around a long time all across the world, and let's be honest.
Well, believe it, they're not only gay men either. You know.
I'm sure it happens to straight couples too.
Some of them don't identify as gay or bisexual.
Yeah.
But anyway, the cruising usually happens around 3 a.m. or so. But believe it or not, it just that the laneway provided the ideal situation. So what I've done is I've situated the two men. They both come across each other looking for anonymous sex late at night, and of course they discovered that, you know, they are who they are. They're former lovers. It means that they're both in a very vulnerable position, and that's what I like about it. The sort of byline of the play is that it's actually a play about having the courage to be vulnerable in a culture where sex is readily available and love is a rare commodity. Because what we find is that they're both actually looking for love. They're not looking for sex.
Mm. Well, come here, look, you just mentioned the cruise and the situation that obviously happens quite a lot. But there's a lot of kind of apps around at this particular time, a Tinder, Grindr, in all that kind of way. People do, and have done for the last 10 years, gone on to apps to try and find the one. Because the way it is with the Tiger just melting over here, people can't afford to go over drinks and clubbing. That's the way they do it. They kind of find lovers online. So do you think it's transcending to that particular genre to be there, or does it happen quite often in bars now, or what's the synopsis?
I think gay men have always managed to
find it,
find quick anonymous sex, you know, wherever it's available. I once wrote an article about the whole issue about gay men donating blood, and said, you know, I started off with, you know, most gay men will have more sex in their lunchtime than a straight man in his lifetime.
Wow.
And it's just an analogy. We you know, it's easier for us, and you know, it's just, we do it because we can. I think if other people could do it, they would. But it's part of this, it's been part of gay culture, you know, since time immemorial, particularly when being gay was illegal and gay men had to find themselves, and they had to do it in very underground ways. But in a way, my play is a response to what I see as the sanitization of gay culture after marriage equality. My views on marriage equality were quite controversial at the time, but I kind of see that, you know, gay men really wanted respectability, not necessarily equality. And I don't like what's happening to traditional gay culture at the moment. I think we're kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater at the moment. And so the play, in a way, is a response to that, because there's no judgment. The situation is just a situation. And I think the audiences will see that, and I think the audiences will see them as two very real people who actually love each other. And the situation of cruising is something that just fills a void, if you like, or highlights that they are searching for something which probably is a bit unattainable, but they still don't give in.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's a great portrayal for you to kind of put that into words, to kind of put this as a performance level. Are you expecting many to come to this? Does it matter who they are? Or what's the final synopsis for you to kind of say, do you know what, I feel happy now that people came from all sorts of sexuality, men, women, whatever. Yeah. What do you hope to achieve by doing this?
Well, I think the story is, it's a love story, actually, and I think it's a universal love story, and I think that gay, straight, or whatever, this is something that people will connect with. We've all experienced what it's like for a relationship to break up, what it's like to have your heart broken, what it's like to bump into an ex. And the thing about bumping into an ex, you always want to look your best, you always want to be on form, you always want to have the upper hand. But here they both bump into each other at their most vulnerable at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that leads to an honesty and a communication that I think is missing. I mean, I'm very, in terms of the kind of structures and the drama behind the play, I'm very influenced by Samuel Beckett.
Beckett, of course.
And there are lots of elements of his work in it. And also Brian Friel's translations. I love the idea in translations that you have two characters speaking different languages who fall in love with each other, and therefore communication is really difficult. And there's an element of that in the play where the audience are led into how each character feels about the other, but each character doesn't know. So the audience knows something that the characters don't know, and I think that's interesting, and that brings the audience into it and will engage them in the whole story, I think. Without giving anything away, I think that it's going to really resonate with them. When we're in rehearsals, I keep thinking of a roller coaster, because one minute they're being really nice to each other, and the next minute they're nearly killing each other. They're nearly having sex. But I won't like give anything away. But needless to say, I won't be surprised if there are pickets on the laneway by the end of the week.
That's what I was going to say. So what's the story with the seating arrangements? Or do people just go up and stand and watch it?
The meeting place for the play is the Beer Market pub on High Street, and then we take people to the laneway from there. It literally runs down the side.
That's great. Something original.
The play lasts for an hour long, so actually people will be standing. So the idea is that they are kind of like flies on the wall.
They
it's almost like they've just stumbled across something, or they're not really there. But we wanted to kind of make sure that they feel the atmosphere and the seediness, and that they just get a feel for it, because this is a real situation as well. And I have to say that the Fringe Festival people have been amazing. They've really helped us. They got the permissions from Dublin City Council, because you can't just rock up and do a play in a laneway. You have to get permission to do it, and we have to have security, and we have to make sure that there's health and safety issues adhered to. So there's a lot to it other than just turning up and doing a play, but we're well rehearsed. The boys are amazing. We're down tonight on site, just doing a bit of a tech run and another run through to make sure that everything is okay. Then we do a tech rehearsal on Thursday, a dress rehearsal on Friday, and preview on Saturday. And then I'll be signing contracts for the Abbey and wherever else they want me to put on my plays. I'm available.
Yeah, and of course, not only are you a director and writer, you are an actor as well. And then you and I worked together some many moons ago, back in 1994. We actually worked with the greats when you think about it. Yes, we worked with, of course, Hugh Grant and Alan Rickman in an awfully big adventure that was filmed in Dublin that particular year.
That was 1993.
Yes. Absolutely. It came out in 95, that's right. It was 93, it came out in 95. And of course, 94 is when Four Weddings and a Funeral became quite big. And then we would say, we worked with him last year. That was great fun. I do recall the time where we had to go around in this bus singing songs.
Do you remember that playing football match in our white theater?
Yes, we had to go. Yes, we. Do you want to tell the story, or shall I?
Yeah. you can tell a bit of it, but do you remember Mike Newell used to refer to us as his treasures?
Yes.
Do you remember? And one day Brian Merriman said, why do you call us your treasures? And he said, well, I took one look at a lot of you and I thought, where did they dig them up from?
Because I was meant to play a pirate, but unfortunately my hair was too short. So they said, look, you're going to play a sailor. And I said, that's grand, no problem. Well, you're going to be a camp gay sailor. And I went, I wasn't expecting that one. But I have to say, we had some laugh. We were on location for a week.
Because you were, like, Brian Merriman had gotten together about 10 of the campus queens he could find. And you had it. We gave you a terrible time.
You did. I was an outsider. I was rough and I was ready. I was going, go on, lads, what's the story with that? And we had the crack, but you did mention we played football out in Bray Wanderers Football Club and we were all wearing perfectly white suits, sailor suits, camp with lipstick.
Every day. They had to be washed every day so that they were spotless for the next day's shoes. And we were rolling around in the mud.
They told us to fall. They told us to go. You were meant to be running camp and fall and just go for the ball and the ball hits you and off you went. But it was just brilliant. It was great crack and great fun. And by the end of the week, we became kind of like slightly like friends, because every time we see you guys, especially Brian, we just look at each other and laugh. Yeah. Now, the particular scene.
We actually worked on that for 5 weeks. You know, there was kind of like.
Yeah, bits
and
pieces.
Like, a couple of days here and a couple of days there.
Yeah.
And can I just mention the fact that by the end of it, Hugh Grant used to bring me my coffee in our bus. Because I played his little love interest in that.
You did. You sat on his knee in the bus.
I got to fall on his lap in the moving bus. Yeah,
it was hilarious because we did actually play football in between takes with Hugh Grant, and Alan Rickman just stood there and looked at us, didn't he?
Well, they kind of just went, do what you like, you know. And but now we played what our version of football was.
It just was priceless. I mean, the movie wasn't probably the best movie written, the story wise, but the fun we had alone, and of course it was predominantly filmed in the Olympia Theatre as well, and it gave Dublin a great insight, especially down by Dame Street, and we went up and down that bloody street and bikes and everything in different costumes before we became sailors as well.
We were
everything, weren't we?
By the way, those sailor suits were made of very thin material, and we were freezing cold.
We were cold.
What we did for our
craft,
people don't realise it.
Such
there was no hot water bottles and fur coats.
None. Well, maybe under Alan Rickman's jumper, you probably had one, but they weren't giving them to us. And sadly, you passed away. So it's a great story to say that we actually worked with him.
We worked with him.
And there was no egotistical kind of actors back then, even though they were quite, well, he was quite dominant and famous. Hugh Grant wasn't as big as he was in 94, but it was just like, it was meant to be, really, wasn't it? And Mike Newell, of course, you mentioned Mike Newell, he was just a great director.
He was amazing.
Yeah.
I think I was probably the one with the biggest ego, you know. I thought I was great because I remember I was in a George Bernard Shaw play at the time as well, and I had to be offset by a particular time to be at the theatre, so I was giving it loads. I thought I was fabulous.
And it was back in the day when I think you got paid into the hand cash at the end of the week, wasn't it? Yeah, do you remember that?
We made a fortune. Jeez,
they looked after us quite well. God be the days. Yes, 1993. So listen to me, tickets for your play, Shadows, can you buy them online or what is the scenario?
Yeah, they're available through the festival box office. You can pay on the night as well, but I would say that it's probably better to make sure you book them in advance because we've limited the number of people coming into the laneway to 30.
Yeah.
And that's to make sure that it remains an intimate experience. I'm more interested in the arts than making money.
So, I love it.
but we were sold out for the Saturday and the Sunday. And I think nearly the last night, the Friday the 13th, is nearly sold out as well. So the tickets from the Monday to the Thursday are still available. And I would swipe them up fast because this is going to... definitely set out quick, but I'm hopeful that it might have another life afterwards. We'll see. I just want to get this one over with. But it's I'm kind of like excited and terrified
at the same time. Yeah, it's like having your birthday, your dominant birthday, your 30th, 40th, your 50th birthday. Like, are people going to come to see me? Do you know what I'm saying?
Don't
the worry is there.
Heart,
yeah. I'm nearly there, Derek. Stop, will you? Yeah, it really is. But how much tickets, Derek?
The tickets are €16.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's... worth every penny. Listen, I think that the whole thing of the Fringe, which is on from the 7th till the 22nd of September, is amazing, and it's I think people should definitely support it and support the new work. You know, people like me who are putting out new writing need to be supported, and the actors, the performers need to be supported. The amount of work that goes into making sure something is ready for presentation, you would not believe. But we love it, as you know, we love it. You're the same. You know, the volunteers and people who work at Near FM are the very, very same. People don't realize the work that goes on behind the scenes, so that we can produce and present some, you know, piece of entertainment. But we love it, and I'm delighted. It's 22 years since I've been in the theatre. I'm back after a long... I've had more bloody comebacks than Frank Sinatra, mind you. But 22 years since I've been on the stage, and I'm loving every minute of it. I'm delighted.
It was meant to
be. I'm hoping now this will be, for me, the start of more work and getting back into theatre on a more regular basis.
Now listen, you said obviously about the actors there and everything. Somebody said during the week in an article that the artists are being suppressed here in Dublin especially, that they can't perform in so many theatres because there's not enough theatres to be kind of, you know, to portray in, especially the squirrel that was up on the back of Tara Street on the wall that had to be taken down. Artists in general, like actors, artists that paint, all that type of thing, are artists being suppressed in Dublin?
Not that I know of, but I mean, again, my answer to there not being enough theatres is do it in a laneway. You know, I'm not really into that. I think that, you know, if you want to do something, you find a way to do it.
Yeah.
I think that, I think there are plenty of theatres around. I think that actors and performers and artists do need to be supported more by our state. I think we need more incentives for people to be involved in the arts. We need more supports for them, and we need to encourage it more. But it is, always has been, hard business.
Absolutely.
To make a living at.
Absolutely.
It's also, let's face it, it's a tough business because rejection can be a large part of it. I don't do rejection.
No.
Never have.
No, never did. But that's how you succeed. Just keep on saying, no, are you joking?
No. I've been doing a lot of articles in the newspapers.
Of course, you have,
about,
yes.
About having found myself, you know, without full time work at the age of 53, and how I responded to that, and getting back to being creative was part of it, and sort of almost reinventing myself at 54 years of age, and finding that all of the skills that I've learned. I mean, I'm also producing this play, so I've had to raise the money for it, and I've had to make sure that everything is working. And so, therefore, I've used all my managerial skills, I've used all my organisational skills, all the networking I've done over the years to make it happen. And I hope after this, then I'll launch my own production company. But the thing is to just get out there and do it and believe in yourself. I think, you know, the world owes nobody anything. And while we do have to support artists and performers and everybody else involved, the writers, directors, there's no, there's nothing like just getting up off your backside and getting out there and doing it and making it happen. And I think a lot of people can do.
Now, of course, speaking of all your talents, you were going to run for the 26th Shannon of the Trinity panel. Well, let's call a spade. You also met.
Remind your listeners that I am single and available.
And who needs Tinder? Well, you met the president, Michael D. Higgins. He's a great fan of the arts as well. When you get to a certain age, you kind of think, do you know what? Like, you know, I'm not finished yet. I can continue going on, and I will actually prove them wrong. The doubters are out there for everybody. And of course, when the demons sit on your shoulder and say, look, you know, you're not good enough to do this in your head, even though you know you are, it's quite a bit of a trauma to get over to realise, hold on a second, no, I can do this. It's a mind over matter thing. Mindfulness.
It is. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And what I would say is, you know, do things, you know, minding your mental health is
vital.
Paramount. Doing things that are good for you, being with people who believe in you, and just taking that first step But, you know, always remember you're as good as anyone else. And just believe in yourself and believe in your abilities. I've no intentions of ever retiring. I've no intentions of stopping. I want to do what I love to do. I'm considering a political career after this as well. So, you know, lots of things are opening up. I found myself as almost a spokesperson for the middle age, or as I like to call them instead, people in their late youth. But, you know, I'm finding this is has become something I'm very passionate about, having found myself in a position whereby at 54 years of age, you know, people were telling me you're finished. And I was like, I don't think so. And a lot of I've met a lot of people who felt the same and who've been told the same. And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's stupid. Age shouldn't be an issue. It should be about your abilities. It should be about your drive and your ambition and your belief in yourself.
Absolutely.
So there.
Yeah, so there you go. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. You mentioned the political career hopefully coming soon as well. We won't go too deep into it because it is an art show. Yeah. Of course, you had the Vice President of America over today, Mr. Pence. You know, people were saying he was against lesbian and gays, the whole thing. And then, of course, you have the situation with Brexit unfolding as we speak. Could you have any views on both of them?
Well, I do. Well, I'm on the record for saying that Brexit won't happen. I said that back on News Talk with David Davenport back on the 1st of January of this year. I still don't think it'll happen. I think that the whole thing is an utter and total fiasco.
It is. It's, it's a reality TV show.
They've tied themselves into so many knots, you know, and really
it's
intrigued.
Strange.
Part of me says just let them go, and part of me says just wait and watch the whole thing unfold. They've destroyed their country. They've destroyed it.
They've made it a laugh and mockery, but I mean, I pulled up on Facebook yesterday. It is watching like watching a reality TV show, and every day it's like a gift that keeps on giving. And it's just like, it's just really, it's happening. And it is, 3.5 years later, it's still going on.
But I have to say, I don't appreciate Mike Pence coming to Ireland and sort of saying to Leo, you know, to and Europe, to Ireland and Europe, to negotiate with Britain in good faith, or with the United Kingdom in good faith.
You said that tonight,
yes. They're the ones who decided to leave.
Yeah, exactly.
They're the ones who have to negotiate in good faith. I think, you know, it's I would be worried about the American stance. But always remember this. No trade deal with the United States can happen without the approval of the other house. It's not
Nancy Pelosi. Yeah, she's adamant about that.
I can never remember her name.
Yes.
So you know, we're in a good position, and I think ultimately, you know, us Irish, we have shown ourselves to be so resilient.
Mm.
We've survived famine, pestilence, how many bloody recessions and crashes. We'll survive Brexit. If there's a no deal, we'll survive it. And I think ultimately, at the end of the day, it'll be good for our country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I genuinely believe our future is with Europe. That's where our strength lies. And it's time we broke off the final shackles of imperialism. So there, you know, I'm not a nationalist by any stretch of the imagination. And I love the Queen and all of that. So, you know, I do think it's sad.
Mm.
But listen, it's their mess. And they need to line.
They need to clean up. But Derek, it's always great to speak to you. Great positivity to end this conversation. Yes.
That could be my next play.
It could be. I definitely go to that one. Just before
I wonder what laneway I'll set that one in.
A bigger one rather than High Street. Just before you go, one more time, where can you get the tickets online now? Can you give it the information, please?
Yes, at fringefest.ie, and or else go turn up on the night to the beer market on High Street. Show starts at 10 o'clock, so basically if people turn up around for any time from 9 o'clock, they may get a ticket, but I would recommend booking in advance because I think it will sell out, particularly now that everybody's heard me on the Arts Show on Near FM.
It's going to be amazing, and we're going to have the podcast off here within the hour as well. So there you go, Derek Byrne, actor, director, writer, broadcaster, and of course journalist. Thank you so much for speaking to me tonight.
Bottle washer as well.
Jack of all trades. Thank you so much for speaking to us on the Arts Show, and the best of luck the weekend with the play.
Are you going to come along?
Definitely. I may not come this weekend, but maybe after the weekend, I'll definitely book a ticket when I go home.
Let me know. I'll make sure. I'll get you a ticket. Don't worry about that.
You're a legend. I really appreciate that. And tell Paddy and tell Shane the best of luck, all right?
I will, of course. Thanks a million.
You're so welcome.
Later.